From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
What we heard as statements by Trump during the campaign and after the campaign is promising regarding the priority of fighting terrorists, and mainly ISIS.
That was Syria's President Bashar al-Assad answering questions from reporters at a Belgian TV station this past Tuesday about his expectations for better relations with the U.S. under the Trump administration.
That's what we've been asking during the last 6 years. So I think this is promising. We have to wait. It's still early to expect anything practical. It could be about the cooperation between the U.S. and Russia that we think is going to be positive for the rest of the world, including Syria. So as I said, it's still early to judge it.
A similarly hopeful tone was expressed by Russia's President Vladimir Putin at a joint press conference in Moscow with the president of Slovenia on Friday.
Russian-American relations over the last 5 years, especially, have deteriorated greatly, and they need to be restored. This is an interest of both Russian and the American people. We have heard how the newly elected elected president, Mr. Trump, treats these relations, and we welcome this, and we hope that our relations will be restored in full and in all directions. This is also not just up to us, but also up to the American side. We proceed from the fact that the American side needs to form its administration and then decide who and how will conduct dialogue with us. This, I'm talking about economic ties, economic relations, other kinds of relations. I'm talking about many regions of the world that are suffering from conflicts. And of course, we could make a great contribution to resolving many international problems, including international terrorism. But this is not just up to us.
Hopeful tones also came out of Beijing on Friday. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Liu Kang told CGTN Foreign Affairs reporter Su Yu Ting that China's President Xi Jinping held a lengthy telephone conversation with U.S. President Trump.
Well, it was a very good telephone conversation. The two leaders actually had not only a lengthy discussion, but a very cordial discussion covering a wide range of issues, covering, for example, not only the bilateral issues, but potential cooperation is on world and regional aspects. During the telephone conversation, President Trump explicitly said that he and the U.S. administration, the U.S. government, adheres to the One China policy. You know that this One China policy, this One China principle has always been the political basis for a sound, healthy China-U.S. bilateral relationship. And also that provides a good safeguarding for all the cooperation between these two important countries on all the fronts. Both leaders agree that the China-U.S. relationship is a very important bilateral relationship, and it has great potentials on many fronts at the bilateral, regional, and international level. For example, on the bilateral level, both leaders are quite interested in deepening our cooperation in economic, trade, investment, scientific technology, energy, and people-to-people exchanges, so all these kind of areas. So there are a lot of potentials, and we believe that actually the cooperation between these two countries in all those areas could be beneficial not only to the two peoples, but maybe to people at large.
One of the problems that will face President Trump as he attempts to reset relations with Russia is the widespread belief in the West that Russian hacking influenced the U.S. election and is targeting elections in Europe. This was Russia's foreign ministry spokesperson, Maria Zakharova, in her weekly press conference Thursday.
Now I'd like to comment on the accusations that Russia has heard about hacker attacks. The case started by Obama's administration is still open. Unfortunately, we witnessed that informational campaign against Russia is being actively expanded in the Western media space. This action attracts new participants, for example, Norway, Canada, Great Britain, the Netherlands, Czech Republic and Estonia have also checked in to say so. I'd like to start with Norway, which evidently is under the influence of the neighboring Sweden. Norway representatives state that Russia has launched hacker attacks against its foreign ministry, military, nuclear and radiological security centers, their working party, one of their universities and their police service as well. And though they say that the investigation is in place, all the labels have already been attached and the culprits have already been found. There are no grounds. These allegations are just empty words. The same situation can be seen in the Netherlands.
Мишенью хакеров из России на этот раз стал флигель.
Local experts say that Russian hackers have targeted the building of the Binnenhof establishment, which houses the Prime Minister's cabinet. Ex-Foreign Minister and ex-Secretary, NATO Secretary General Mr. Hobbs Heffer adds fuel to the fire by saying that his country is attractive for Russian hackers because in March it will host parliamentary elections. So all the pieces of the puzzle are in place. Russian hackers is a phenomenon that is bred on the elections. That is why Russian hackers aim at a country which has elections ahead.
По итогам прошедших выборов можно будет
Mr. Hobbs Heffer's words, the results of the election will show the participation of Russian hackers in this process. I do not even want to cite these statements. This hysteria that has been expanding in Russian media has been joined by the representatives of the government of the country. They have no grounds, but still they call Russia the main source for cyber attacks.
Вся эта история добралась, конечно, до Канады.
This hysteria has expanded to Canada as well.
Силами хакеров в выборах президентских выборов в Соединенных Штатах Америки руководство.
The idea that Russia somehow participated in the U.S. elections
вырабатывает, заявила о выработке тактики защиты собственного выборного процесса от возможных.
That is why Canada has switched over to working out a scheme to protect Canadian government and Canadian elections from Russian attacks. More fuel to the flames is added by the American retirees who make frequent trips to Canada in order to work out measures to counter Russian and Kremlin hackers. For example, ex-head of CIA and NSA of the United States, Mr. Hayden, when making statement in Canada, said that Russian hackers pose the main threat to Canada. When asked how Russian hackers can be identified, how can they identify where the threat comes from, he said. The more totalitarian the state is, the more likely it is to be involved in state hacking. then probably we should try to find some information on hackers in the works by Niccolo Machiavelli. Probably we should find a couple of passages there. More insinuations relating to Russian cyber threat has been produced by the defense minister of Great Britain, Mr. Michael Fallon, who made a speech at one of the Scotland's universities, and instead of discussing prospective cooperation of Russia and Great Britain in the area of countering cyber attacks, he preferred to assign the lion's dole of responsibility for hacker attacks over Bulgaria, the Netherlands, France, Germany, and Montenegro to Russia. According to him, Russia is currently crash-testing Western countries, thus undermining the fundamentals of Great Britain's national security. And this is said by the defense minister of one of the leading powers. Thus, one may have an impression that the so-called Russian threat alarms him even more than global terrorism.
Отчитываться придется. Что касается российских, русских, кремлевских хакеров, то, знаете,
as for Russian or Kremlin hackers,
гениальная история, потому что никто не знает, где они.
This is a miraculous story because no one knows who they are, where they come from, but everybody knows how they can be countered and how much it will cost. But what's the most interesting is that
сказал, что с территории России или силами русских осуществляются кибератаки против правительственных учреждений, в том числе ФРГ.
He accused Russia of launching hacker attacks against governmental authorities in many countries, including Germany.
Süddeutsche Zeitung.
And in parallel to it, Germany publishes an article in Süddeutsche Zeitung, according to that, the investigation of misinformational campaign launched by Russia against Germany. More than that, it article says that there is no evidence and no proof maintaining the idea that Russia is guilty for the attacks. This is what we hear from officials, from those who represented governments of their countries. As for the article in Süddeutsche Zeitung, it took 1 year for our German colleagues to understand that there was no informational or cyber intervention. Then the question arises, why now? Why, despite this hysteria in many countries, and despite the statements made by the officials of neighboring countries, why do they publish this article now, making references to official representatives of Germany? Probably it is because Berlin is finally starting to understand that speculating on this topic may finally undermine the legitimacy of the elections. To close this topic down, I'd like to say that there have been proven information as to who stands behind hacker attacks and the espionage. However, there is an intention to make the country guilty, which has nothing to do with it.
But it's not just Russian hackers that are seeking to influence elections, according to the Western media. WikiLeaks was the target of what it called fake news after a BBC reporter suggested the whistleblower's revelations were intended to support particular candidates in the run-up to French elections. RT's Anastasia Cherkina has more.
Indeed, it seems like a spat is in full swing between WikiLeaks and the BBC. First off, we have to keep in mind that we saw a BBC inquiry, the so-called show called The Inquiry, release a report dubbed "Can You Believe What You Read on WikiLeaks?" asking lots of questions about the activities of WikiLeaks.
It's been reported in the last few days that WikiLeaks, the website that publishes classified information, has interesting material on the three main candidates in France's upcoming presidential election.
Well, this could be seen as yet another attempt of many to try to connect the dots between the WikiLeaks website as well as Russian activity. This is something that we've seen time and time again unraveling, especially during the U.S. presidential cycle. But in this particular case, using examples such as a headline of a Russian newspaper that reads, "Assange is going to pour oil on the fire of the presidential campaign in France," their attempts to try to connect some dots between the unraveling presidential campaign in France. We've seen these insinuations unraveling on Twitter as well. Let's take a look.
Could be coincidence, but funny how Julian Assange gets leaks of emails that hurt candidates who Moscow oppose. Now it's Macron's turn.
Well, here, of course, WikiLeaks didn't want any of it, and they stepped in by tweeting, "Here's UK State TV's BBC Nick Robinson spreading false information to 723,000 people. Nick, WikiLeaks tweeted information on all candidates, Macron the least." And they did proceed to show that they have thousands of files available on other presidential candidates, including François Fillon and Marine Le Pen. So there, BBC weren't really able to make that point come across quite well. Of course, all of this comes as also here in the UK, the Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn has accused the BBC of reporting fake news.
There's a story going about that you've set a date for when you're going to quit. You've not considered for a moment whether you as leader are damaging the party's
chance. I'm really
chance.
Surprised the BBC is reporting fake news. Well, there is no news.
What I'd like.
Well, let's keep in mind that this is not the last or first time when the BBC gets accused of some sort of bias. We do know that here in the UK, on more than one occasion, people have come out to protest issues such as coverage by the BBC of issues such as Palestine, the Scottish independence referendum, and of course, last but not least, Brexit.
Hacking, destabilization, and a military buildup, along with weaponized information, all accusations being hurled at Russia, and one of the loudest voices making those accusations is the UK, which calls again for more economic sanctions against Moscow. With a change in the U.S. administration at the lead, is there a chance for a change in tone from London? This was Russia's ambassador to the U.K., Alexander Yukashenko, speaking with RT's Sophie Shevardnadze Thursday.
Sir Michael Fallon, the UK's defense secretary, blamed Russia for trying to undermine the West by spreading lies, weaponizing misinformation, and even creating a post-truth age. Why do leaders in the West believe Moscow has more sway over their voters than their own politicians at home?
Well, it's first of all, Russia, it's a brand. And once you don't engage Russia, you look a little bit provincial. But as far as the statements of the Western leaders, I would like to say that there are no proofs of this kind of statements. And every time when we hear something from London, we are asking for the explanations and we're asking for the facts. We didn't get any facts from them. And so we believe this is just the fake news. This is just the sort of the fake statements.
Secretary Johnson accused Russia of American election hacking. Why is UK getting involved in American matters?
Well, it's a good question because, you know, the British blamed us, I mean Russia, that we are one way or another way involved in the American elections. But it's exactly the case with the British because if you look at the most official statements before the elections, you will find that the British officials supported the one candidate in the United States, that was Hillary Clinton. And this is just exactly what the British were talking about Russia. So basically, the British establishment was on the side of the one candidate, and this is a clear interference into the internal election processes in the United States.
British MP Ben Bradshaw says it's highly likely Russia interfered in a Brexit referendum as well.
I don't think we have even begun to wake up to what Russia is doing when it comes to cyber warfare. Not only their interference, now proven in the American presidential campaign, probably in our own referendum last year. We don't have the evidence for that yet, but I think it's highly probable.
That's another fake story, because I asked Boris Johnson to present the facts, and he couldn't do this. So basically, you can read a lot of articles about that in the British press, but no facts at all.
But more importantly, what does Russia stand to gain from Brexit?
Well, basically, for us, we believe this is the internal matter of Britain. This is first. Second, as the consequences of that, of the Brexit, we have to renegotiate the trade agreements, because today we have the trade agreements with the EU. So the next step will be the new trade agreements. So we didn't start thinking of that because the process is not launched in Brussels. But this is the only consequence. So different trade agreement with the United Kingdom, but this is, of course, will be the result of the negotiations.
Now, you wrote once that the claims of Russian interferers in British politics are a sign that Western elites are living in denial, actually trying to blame their shortcomings on outsiders. What can make them confront reality, in your opinion?
Good question, because the country is divided. Half of the country believe that they have to go along with the Brexit. The other half is opposing that. So different points of views. For the most of the people of Britain, the globalization wasn't a success. If you go just to go outside London, you will find that many people are suffering, you know, from the low salaries, from the low standards of the social security. They want changes. And that's why, you know, in this situation, politicians in Britain, they have to divert the attention of the public. And Russia is a very convenient tool just to use as some kind of a symbol, very important symbol, but that could divert the attention of the people.
As a response to the supposed Russian interference, the UK proposed NATO to do more to counter the alleged misinformation spread by Russia. Is the military alliance about to embark on an information war?
Well, I don't think so. It's just if you read the British press, you will find a lot of proposals, you know, how to handle with the Russian news, what we're presenting. And by the way, in the center of these accusations is the Russia Today, which is basically presents a different point of view and which is welcomed by the British public. I don't believe that the NATO will be part of that game. But who knows, you know, the people who are working in this area, they're quite creative.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if a channel named NATO Today pops up anytime soon to counter Russia Today. Anyways, back to Sir Michael Fallon, who claimed that Russia threatens international security. But like Boris Johnson, Fallon also said that UK should nevertheless engage with Moscow, including military communication. What do you think are the chances of successful military-to-military dialogue between UK and Russia?
For the time being, we don't have any military dialogue at all. A year ago, when we just started the operation in Syria, we offered Britain our cooperation. And I personally had a conversation, a separate meeting with the former Foreign Secretary, at that time was Mr. Hammond. And we proposed two things. The first one is we offered British to target together the terrorists, and they refused to do this. And the second proposal was to work together with the representative of the Free Syrian Army to engage them into the peace talks, peace negotiation, and the peace settlement. British side refused to do this. As I understand, our proposals are still on the table, but it's up to the British side, you know, decide how they're going to behave on this situation. What I want to say is just the process in Syria, peace process, is moving. It's moving without Britain. but we'll be happy to have everybody on board because we need peace in Syria, we need settlement, and we need this country stable, and we need the people of Syria as a future.
The Russian embassy in London responded to this latest statement from the UK officials, saying that there is a witch hunt against Moscow because of Russia's role in the Syrian peace process. But everyone wants peace, right? Doesn't UK want peace in Syria?
Well, you know, some people, you know, they seek it in words. I'll give you one example. Humanitarian aid. You remember Aleppo, when the terrorists were holding the eastern part of Aleppo. There were so many conversations, so many cries here in the press, in official statements, that what's going on around Aleppo. And everybody was talking about the humanitarian aid. When the Aleppo was freed, and now today we need the humanitarian aid in this part of the country, Britain is not supporting that. You know, we didn't have any single, you know, delivery from Britain to help the people of Aleppo. So on the words, yes, it's everybody wants to have a free and prosperous Syria, but we need the deeds.
Back in the summer, Secretary Johnson actually said that Syrian conflict cannot be solved with President Assad still in power. But now he seems open to the idea of Assad running for re-election. Is the UK stance on Syria beginning to align with that of Russia?
Well, I'll tell you, we've noticed this shift. And I believe that this is the result of our numerous explanations to the British, because what we're telling them that they have to follow the democratic approach. This is the people of Syria who should decide who is going to run the country. It's not in Moscow or in London or in Washington. It's the people of Syria. And we try to explain to the British, and we see the shifts. But still, it's a long way to go. In order to help the process, you have to do something in real life. I mean, we want to see the deeds, not just the statements.
British Royal Air Force has been more active in this campaign against Islamic State than it was in Afghanistan or Iraq. You've called on the UK to fight ISIS together with Russia. Do you feel London is doing enough on this front?
Well, it's just London could be the part of the coalition, and definitely they could be helpful, you know, in this area. But in order to do something, first you have to talk, and we don't have any conversations with Britain on that matter. This is first. They should be engaged on that. We don't see this engagement, or at least we don't see any signs of that. And this is our task, to engage as many countries as possible. We believe that Britain could make a positive contribution. I think it's time to do this.
When you hear comments like the defense secretary is calling a Russian carrier returning from Syrian waters a ship of shame.
Well, this is, I leave it for Secretary of Defense, this kind of statements. It's just a reflection of the different approaches, how to handle the problems of eastern part of Aleppo. Because we believe that the best way is to free people of Aleppo. The British wanted just a ceasefire to conserve the situation. We believe that the Syrian approach and our approach was the right one. And basically, the history just showed that we were on the right side of the history. But as far as the cooperation, I think the first thing we have to do, we have to restore the political dialogue in order to explain our British colleagues what our plans in Syria, you know, to engage them. Without the dialogue, it will be very difficult to establish the cooperation. We believe that's why, by the way, Lavrov invited Boris Johnson to come to Moscow and to talk a little bit more about Syria, because their meeting in New York in September, definitely half an hour wasn't enough to explain what we want in Syria. And the British definitely needs the explanations. This is first. Second, I think we could do something together in a different formats. And that's another opportunity for the British. So basically, we'll be happy to engage the British, but it looks like that they need a political will in this country to do this. For the time being, I don't see any political will here.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.